This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
$1,000 on shoes?
What's the matter, Morty?
Girl, the thing.
Change my whole dress.
Girl, great gowns. Girl, beautiful gowns.
Fashion has changed.
Hi, I'm Lauren Garoni.
And I'm Chelsea Fairless.
And welcome to another episode of the Every Outfit podcast. It is that time of the month where we watch an old episode of Sex and the City. And this month we've decided to do Models and Mortals.
Season 1, Episode 2.
Mostly because we haven't done a Season 1 episode in a while and because Chelsea has decided to yet again do another from top to bottom rewatch of Sex and the City.
I think you should join me. I realized I hadn't done it since we wrote our book, which is crazy.
5 years ago, even.
It's not as if I don't watch Sex and the City. I obviously do. I just not in order.
We do these rewatch episodes out of sequence because if we did it chronologically, we'd probably lose our minds. But I agree with you. You know what? I will join you in this rewatch. But before we get into the episode, we have to mention something that is going on in the End Just Like That world, which is...
Carrie Bradshaw appears to be in the country.
So Sarah Jessica Parker recently posted photos of herself in a very bucolic, probably upstate New York background with a red barn behind her reading a book.
That can only mean one thing. She's gone to visit Aiden in West Virginia.
Although most of the comments are just like, Aiden's cabin in Suffern? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Guys, he moved to Norfolk, Virginia. I know myself and like many of you have blocked out most parts of season 2 of In Just Like That, but I do remember Aiden moved to Virginia. And Carrie erroneously thought that it was a red brick village because she looked up the wrong Norfolk. She looked up the UK Norfolk. Isn't that hilarious?
Okay, no need to be a bitch about that.
All right, guys, she's gone to Virginia. Carrie is out of the city, which is something that happened in season 2 of In Just Like That, but off screen. Chell, I can't even be upset anymore. It's like when you're in a fight with your partner for so long that you've just gotten tired. Like, I have no more energy to be upset at this show.
Well, I like when they leave the city, but it seems like only Carrie has left. I'm imagining. I can't imagine that Miranda and Charlotte want to join her on this trip. I more fear for the cast of side characters that could be awaiting her at this location. I'm thinking all of Aiden's kids, maybe they have girlfriends. Aiden's ex-wife, maybe she has a partner now.
Aiden evidently has a line through West Elm. He probably has a couple assistants or interns helping him design.
Yeah, and we're about to meet all of those people. Also, I can't imagine this will end well.
Between Carrie and Aiden.
Well, going to Suffern wasn't the greatest thing for their relationship.
Yes, Carrie has two enemies. Number one is Paris. Number two is country life.
Maybe she's changed. Does she now want to move to the country? Is that the season 3 cliffhanger where she's like, actually, I'm into it here.
Sure. Whatever. Yeah.
I'm fine with it. You're fine with it?
It's beating me down. I'm like, whatever you want to do. And just like that, I'll go with you. Her hair looks great.
Yeah, her hair does look great. She tagged her hairstylist in the caption.
You know, we are getting curly Carrie back. So
that's great. Shall we get into this episode? An episode that needs a trigger warning for sexual assault and disordered eating.
Indeed. So the episode description is, Miranda dates a modelizer, Samantha tapes a sex encounter, and Carrie experiments with Derek, the model. Which is and isn't what this episode is about. A few things that are worth noting is, while this is the second episode of the first season of Sex and the City, it really is the first episode of Sex and the City in the sense that the pilot, the very first episode, was shot a year before they shot the rest of season one, which would account for why Sarah Jessica Parker's hair looks completely different. Carrie's apartment is different, although the exterior location of her apartment is still not the Perry Street one. And I was shocked at how many of the characteristics of the characters, like Samantha and Miranda, were really set starting from this second episode.
This episode starts with Miranda. She is at a dinner party. She's been invited by a man that she hardly knows, who is a fairly successful sports agent.
Who once told her she had nice legs. So, thoughts on a first date being at a gentleman's friend's dinner party?
Very bizarre.
They all go around the table and her date asks, which old movie star would you have liked to fucked when they were young?
Okay, this is confusing though. Like, it has to be an old movie star, but they have to be young. So it's like you're saying, like, I would fuck Cary Grant in Bringing Up Baby, but not in North by Northwest.
I believe Miranda's like dead or alive, because it's like, so you could pick Warren Beatty, who's still living, but Warren Beatty from Bonnie and Clyde, not like Bullworth era Warren Beatty.
For some reason, I always thought this was old movie stars you wanted to fuck when you were young.
I guess it's kind of one and the same. I mean, I guess the idea is late Gen X, young boomers that are at this dinner table would have been young when they saw these movie stars in these movies.
Miranda picked Sean Connery.
Yesterday, today, future. I think Miranda maybe would have reevaluated that statement a few years after this episode, but sure.
Okay, so what would your answer be?
I think Warren Beatty.
Really?
Well, you say that incredulously.
No, Warren Beatty's hot. I would go with Robert Redford if I'm going for male actors of that generation, and I'm not going like old Hollywood.
Yeah, who am I gonna pick? Glenn Ford?
I don't know. You tell me.
Rudolph Valentino? What I find fascinating about this scene is that her date is just so excited to give his answer, which is Veronica Lake and Sullivan's Travels, which, yeah, sure.
Absolutely. See, I think I would pick Marlena Dietrich because I require a degree of androgyny and that's just not super common with old Hollywood, and I feel like me and Greta Garbo would have had bad chemistry.
Oh, interesting.
You know? Well, apparently she was kind of a wet blanket.
So they say Sophia Loren, Montgomery Clift, Marilyn Monroe, Bing Crosby. This will become important in a second because in the following scene, Miranda, again, this is a first date, but she is spending time with now the girlfriends, you imagine, of her date in the kitchen. One of the friends sort of offhandedly says, like, oh, I guess he took our ultimatum seriously. And Miranda's like, I'm sorry, what now? So this guy's thing is that he forces his friends to have a dinner party where he's able to bring his first date to and then ask the same question over and over again.
Yes, the question about old movie stars you'd have liked to fuck when they were young. Look, evergreen conversation topic.
How pissed off would you be if you were forced to do bits for someone else? This is like a pop culture version of the Twilight Zone for us.
We get the flashbacks to these models, one of whom answered Charlie Sheen, and the other one just like had no answer and like excused herself to go to the bathroom to throw up, presumably.
Right. I initially thought when she was whispering in his ear that she was like, come to the bathroom so we can fuck.
Incorrect read.
She was regurgitating the dinner that she had.
Yeah. And then you see this flashback to his female friends being like, can you please bring a woman to this dinner party that can have a conversation with us and not like throw up?
Because as they say, it's too depressing that you keep doing this. By the way, not like you're better than this. They're like, it's bringing the vibe of our friend group down that you keep doing this, so please stop it.
Yeah, and you would never get a scene like this now because it does display a lack of sensitivity towards bulimics. That said, having a random girl throw up in your house would be fucked up. So I am on his friend's side.
And Miranda has this great line where she confronts her date and he goes, you know what? You're right. I am obsessed. And she's like, so what am I, your intellectual beard for the evening? The dialogue in this episode really is unparalleled. This episode is written by Darren Star, who created the show, off of Candace Bushnell's column. And the one thing that stands out about this episode is how, I will use SVU parlance, or Law and Order parlance, ripped from the headlines, this episode is from Candace's own article.
Yes, her article about modelizers. A few characters are taken directly from that article, which came out in 1995 in the New York Observer. And yes, we'll get into that in a little bit. So cut to Miranda and Carrie at a restaurant.
While they haven't worked out the I couldn't help but wonder yet, the question of the episode, which Miranda says is, if men like Nick are dating models, what chance do ordinary women have? I mean, do you have to be a supermodel to get a date in New York?
You don't, but there are a lot of models there. And I think that Carrie's voiceover about how in other cities, models are confined to billboards and magazines. In New York, they run free. Very true. Very funny.
So Carrie has the voiceover that Chelsea's talking about how the modelizers are a particular breed. They're a step behind womanizers who will sleep with just about anything in a skirt. Modelizers are obsessed not with women, but with models, who in most cities are safely confined to billboards and magazines. This is almost word for word taken from Candace's column. The difference is modelizers inhabit a sort of parallel universe with its own planets, Nobu, Bowery Bar, Flowers, Tunnel, Expo, Metropolis, and satellites, parentheses, the various apartments, many near Union Square, which the big modeling agencies rent out for the models, and goddesses, parentheses, Linda, Naomi, Christy, Elle, Bridget.
Wow, Bridget got a glow up. We don't talk about Bridget Hall as a supermodel so much anymore.
Well, Candace has impeccable taste, so of course Bridget would be included in this.
I think one key difference between Candace's original article and what this episode is there's more of an acknowledgement of, like, modelizers are just rich finance guys that have drugs.
Right.
And drugs were something that was mentioned more in Sex and the City, the column, than in Sex and the City, the show.
Very true. Another thing that the show Sex and the City has that Candace's column doesn't is Carrie looking to camera and speaking to it, which every time, I know that it happens, but it is a jump scare.
Absolutely.
So in the episode, Carrie then looks to camera and goes, as if we didn't have enough problems.
Cut to Carrie's apartment. The conversation is continuing with Samantha and Charlotte.
And Miranda is also there. Again, I love, and it's something they give up as the show became more popular and they had more access to great locations, is they lost the idea that these characters hang out at each other's apartments.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, is just a reality. And it's what made the early seasons of Sex and the City so great, is the juxtaposition of eating Chinese food versus going to these glamorous parties.
So Miranda says, the advantages given to models and to beautiful women in general are so unfair, it makes me puke. To which Samantha's like, sweetheart, you are so cute. Don't say that to me.
Don't tell me I'm cute.
Terrible thing to say to your friend.
Yeah, Miranda really harps on the ED of it all, because Charlotte makes this point about the beauty of models, saying they have this distant, sexy look. And Miranda replies, that's not sexy, that's starvation. To which Samantha then goes, that's starvation in the best restaurants. Again, the dialogue is so on fire in this episode.
It absolutely is. And Charlotte goes on to talk about how much she hates her thighs and, you know, no matter how good I feel about myself, I see Christy Turlington and I just want to give up. To which Miranda says, I just want to force feed her lard, but that's the difference between you and me. Excuse me, no. Also, look, I may be wrong. I don't know about the intricacies of Christy Turlington's eating habits, but it seems like Christy Turlington is like the one model that is just like kind of healthy.
Yeah. I mean, as we saw in that Apple TV documentary, she's certainly the one that has done the least with her face and believes in aging naturally. Carrie holds up a magazine. I forget if it's Cosmopolitan or Marie Claire. She says, I find it fascinating that four beautiful flesh and blood women could be intimidated by some unreal fantasy. I mean, look at this. And she holds up the magazine. Is this really intimidating to any of you? But this is a pre-Photoshop of Horror's World of magazines. Like, that woman on the cover is not an unreal fantasy. Like, she does indeed look like that. And there are just some people who are genetically gifted. It is enviable, but it's not a mythical creature. They do indeed exist.
Yeah, of course. This is where we get the I couldn't help but wonder. which is a Carrie voiceover where she says, if models could cause otherwise rational individuals to crumble in their presence, exactly how powerful was beauty?
You've lived in New York for a long time, Carrie. It's very powerful.
It's powerful. Pretty privilege is real, but a lot of people are beautiful and aren't able to parlay it into being a model, being an actress, being an influencer, or finding a rich finance guy to marry. So there's limitations to beauty.
That's true. It is funny that this is coming out of the mouth of a unique looking woman, but like a conventionally, all four of them are conventionally attractive.
So now we get a man on the street section where Carrie is interviewing models and modelizers, a real toxic mix of people
who frankly deserve each other is what I'm getting from the end of this.
So Nick, Miranda's sports agent love interest, is quoted saying, why fuck the girl in the skirt when you can fuck the girl in the ad for the skirt?
A man not living in Los Angeles or New York would not have these thoughts. Because it just would not be a possibility for them.
Then we get models saying stuff like, most guys just think you're dumb, but I'm really very literary. I'll sit down and read a whole magazine from cover to cover.
Yeah, again, this is not the most charitable view on models, which is interesting as well.
Well, not all models are dumb, obviously, but there's a reason why the stereotype exists.
Of course. And then there's a model named Brad who's giving his best Derek Zoolander, who's like, you get all sorts of things, like a motorcycle, a juicer, a Herb Ritz photo. I'm like, that's a great deal, honestly.
Carrie then goes to interview Barkley,
played by the actor Gabriel Mock from the show Suits, and as well as the film that you hate that I love, Because I Said So.
Right.
He's the guy that Mandy Moore actually is attracted to.
See, not a memorable face. A good looking face, but not memorable to me personally.
Of course. And you were not one of the billion people who watched Suits over the pandemic on Netflix.
No. So Carrie describes Barkley as a notorious modelizer who was one of those Soho wonders who maintained a fabulous lifestyle despite never having sold a single painting.
It's like, no, Carrie, he comes from family money. That is how he's able to afford a Soho loft.
Well, and that's what Candace says in the article. She says his parents pay his rent, which is a much more savage read. Again, Candace's column, darker and bitchier than what we see on Sex and the City.
Absolutely. It's in the show, he says, models are a lot looser than you'd think. It's way easier to screw a model than a regular girl because that's what they do all the time. It's how regular people are when they're on vacation. And I'm like, what do you mean that's what they do all of the time? Models are not sex workers. So I was beside myself at this line, but the real Barkley in Candace's article adds a bit more context, because that is a line directly taken from Candace's article, but he then goes on to say the real Barkley in the article, they're away, so they do things they wouldn't normally do, but these girls are away all the time because they travel from place to place, so that's what they're like all the time. Which I'm like, I guess I kind of get. It's a little more charitable than like just thinking models and sex workers are interchangeable.
Well, there is certainly overlap.
I also think it's interesting, and I wonder if they cast Gabriel Mock, who this is one of his first roles, because in Candace's article, the real Barkley is described as someone with a face like a Botticelli angel framed by a blonde pageboy haircut, where they were like, just get us a blonde who looks like he could be an Italian sculpture.
Carrie's in his loft, which is extremely 90s, and he also has that 90s trope of just having like several TV monitors stacked up together.
Okay. I would love to get into this.
I love that. We should bring that back. Or did that ever exist in real life, or was it just in music videos and like video installations and galleries?
I think that, because aside from the sex crime going on that we'll get into in a second, what is this setup? Because you're right, it is 10 TVs of various sizes that somehow at a button's touch can play multiple clips at the same time.
It's his art, immersive video installation that I guess he will never exhibit anywhere but his sad loft paid for by his parents. Basically, you know, Carrie's asking him about models and he's like, let me show you my real art, which is this video installation of him fucking all of these models, but they're being secretly filmed. I did a quick Google search, and he has committed a felony, which is unlawful surveillance in the second degree, punishable by up to 4 years in prison. And of course, he would have to be on the sex offender registry. And also, I think because he then showed these tapes to Carrie, I think that also then qualifies as revenge porn. I think that would be a separate charge.
Oh, yeah. Make no mistake. If this episode was happening now, it's not on Sex and the City. It's the beginning of a Special Victims Unit episode.
And this episode is where an SVU Sex and the City crossover could have really worked.
But Carrie does ask, she goes, do they know about this? And he just shrugs and goes, maybe. She then lights a cigarette and frankly looks delighted. I know that people focus on a lot of things when they mention the problematic nature of Sex and the City, but this is actually the most fucked up thing that happens on the show. Carrie needs to leave this apartment and immediately go to a police station.
Yeah, and her behavior struck me as odd the first time I watched this episode. Like, when I watched it at the time, it was weird. And I get it. I think that when some women are faced with a creepy, potentially unsafe situation, it's easier to behave as if you're one of the boys. It's like, it feels like a safer option. And then you get to be the quote unquote cool girl that Amy Dunn talks about in her famous monologue. And because you're cool, maybe you won't be victimized like these other women have been.
I take it with Carrie's smile and lighting her cigarette, and especially the way that models are spoken about as these other things. I mean, Barkley literally refers to them as things, which comes from Candace's articles, that things are models and civilians are normal people, that in a way it's like, well, they deserve it. I mean, I don't know what to make of Carrie's smile. She certainly doesn't stop talking to her friend after this.
This also is happening under the guise of her doing research, right? She's a sexual anthropologist. Not that that means that you should be, you know, watching video footage of sex crimes, but
this is not a part of Candace's column. This was invented for the episode.
How awful to be the real guy that she interviewed for the article. Are you listening? Dear sir, contact us.
I'm going to assume that for the column, she even changed the real Barkley's name. Although we know from the column that his father was a hanger magnate from Minneapolis.
So we should be able to figure out who this guy is. We then get a Skipper walk and talk. Skipper, remember him?
Skipper and Carrie eating hot dogs.
Skipper getting so much screen time in these early episodes. And Carrie is in her fur coat, one of her most iconic looks.
Absolutely. And Skipper is from Candace's column. He does appear in the Sex and the City book. Obviously, Skipper is a real person to Candace, who Carrie Bradshaw is based off of. It's hard to imagine in the world of Darren Star's Sex and the City that Skipper and Carrie are actually friends.
Well, straight women and straight men are rarely friends if it's not through like a couple situation.
Very true. So Skipper calls Miranda but makes Carrie take the call because he's like, I keep calling her and she won't call me back. It does the thing that we've talked about that we love in television and movies where it's one ring and immediately goes to voicemail. So Skipper takes the phone back and leaves a voicemail and he says, hey, this is Skipper. I'm in the street with Carrie. I just told her how you won't call me back. So now you have to call me back. You better call me back. No, I'm kidding. I'm joking. But seriously, I hope you called me back. And did I mention this was Skipper?
Such scary behavior.
I think I've been on record in saying that the boyfriends of the week on Sex and the City are just typically not attractive, and my hot take is that Skipper is better looking than many of the boyfriends of the week, but this voicemail absolutely gave me the ick. Miranda should never have dated him.
Absolutely. He's a full freak and probably a men's rights activist.
He's certainly the stereotype of the nice guy that is not so subtly pressuring women to spend time with him. And then Carrie looks to camera and goes, I believe there's a curse put on the head of anyone who tries to fix up their friends. How many times does that actually work out?
Well, it does sometimes, which is why we try. But cut to a fashion show. Carrie has to go to one for research because where better to find modelizers in their natural habitat than a fashion show?
Luckily for Carrie, her friend Stanford Blatch happens to be representing the hottest model in town.
Whose name is The Bone?
Derek, aka The Bone, which probably has to do with him having a large penis, right?
I was going to say maybe chiseled cheekbones.
Hard to say, probably both.
Is this the first and last time that we see Stanford work?
Until In Just Like That, where he's managing a TikTok star. I think even more than big, no one's job is more nebulous and hard to understand than Stanford and exactly the type of client he manages. So yeah, I guess he's managing a model, which models typically don't have managers. They have agents, but whatever.
Stanford is clearly obsessed with him.
And why wouldn't he?
So he introduces The Bone to Carrie. They have a semi-awkward conversation.
She tries to get out of it by saying, like, oh, I'll let you get dressed, because he's only in underwear. And he goes, I am dressed.
So they sit down to watch the fashion show. Barkley shows up. Samantha is there. And she is very intrigued when Carrie tells her that he only dates models.
Carrie says, Samantha is the only person that I know who thought that being close to beauty, her proximity to beauty, made her more attractive. Samantha also likes being this close so that she can see all the flaws on the model. Like, there's a lot of internalized misogyny and hatred going on in this episode as well.
That's the theme of this episode.
Also, I thought this was such a brilliant piece of dialogue. Samantha covertly asks Carrie if Barkley is gay by asking martini straight up or with a twist. And Samantha, knowing that he only fucks models, now definitely wants to fuck him because she likes the challenge. And Carrie tries to dissuade her by being like, hey, just so you know, he films his sexual encounters. And Samantha's like, even better. Like, great.
Truly unhinged. So at the after party, or is it the after party or is it just another party?
It's hard to say. And I do love season one portrayal of nightlife because this is the worlds they would operate in. Like, Carrie is stuffing her face with hors d'oeuvres. And it's like, that is how I believe this woman has dinner.
Yeah. So Big walks in. This is the third time they've interacted at this point, right?
Yes.
He tells Carrie, I thought I saw you on the runway. And then he informs her that he started reading her column and that it was, quote unquote, cute. Another offensive usage of cute.
Yeah, it's hard to read if that's a compliment or not. But I think it's one of the few acknowledgments we ever get of someone in Carrie's life actually reading her article, which I think answers a big question, big pun intended, question for us, which is Big very much would be checking in on Carrie through her article throughout the seasons.
So Carrie's like, I'm working on this story about men who date models. Any thoughts? And Big says only that they're very lucky. So he's obviously dated a model or two in his day.
Oh, of course. I mean, it's shocking that he isn't the subject of this article because he fits the type, especially from Candace's article, as a biz bro that loves young, attractive women.
And so Big's like, okay, what have you learned from your research? And Carrie says, well, you know, some guys treat it as a competitive sport and others just are insecure and need the validation, to which Big says, and probably others just have a thing for exceptionally beautiful women, which triggers Carrie.
Yes. And you assume that this is the category that Big finds himself in.
In Carrie's voiceover, she says, suddenly I felt like I was wearing patchouli in a room full of Chanel.
Very good. Also, Big oddly asks her if she works out of an office or something. And she's like, no, I work out of my apartment, and the other half of the time I work out of a coffee shop that is underneath the apartment, which, as we know, will change in seasons to come. But I love this idea of the writer working out of a coffee shop, which is very typical, but it's not what I associate with Carrie Bradshaw.
Yeah, this is the first and last time we see her at a coffee shop until, I guess, the renovation with Aiden, where she then has to work at a coffee shop because she can't work in her apartment or something.
She takes refuge, yes, after they fight in a Starbucks. I believe she notes that everyone working out of Starbucks aren't annoying people. They're people who've just recently gotten into a fight with their partners.
So in Carrie's voiceover, she also says, "The truth was, I thought I had come to terms with my looks the year I turned 30 when I realized that I no longer had the energy to be superficial."
But she did have the energy to lie to herself, because clearly she and nobody has put that to bed by the time they are 30.
So Samantha comes up and is like, "I think Barkley is into me."
Yes. Although she's like, "Do you think he thinks I'm a model?" And it's like, "No, Samantha."
Carrie leaves and randomly the bone walks out and is like, "Can I come home with you?"
I've been on record. I'm a sucker for a high emotional IQ himbo. And he asked to share a cab with Carrie because he's like, "The club is so loud," which you would think would be a line, but he's in many ways like very innocent. And I took that earnestly.
Yeah, just because you're a male model doesn't mean you want to go to parties and blah, blah, blah. He's clearly about more than that.
Of course.
Back at Carrie's apartment, he discloses that he doesn't date models because they're too stupid.
And he admires Carrie for being a writer. He says, "I wish I could write. I've got intense thoughts, but I can't keep them in my head long enough to get them down on paper. Rough life."
And Carrie's like, "Well, what do you want to do with your life?" And he says, "Move back to Iowa, have kids, and be a cop." Red flag.
But he exists in multitudes, Chelsea, because he says, "I'm totally neurotic. One minute I could be walking down the street totally cool, and the next minute I'm depressed for no reason. I'm totally self-conscious before I say something. I say it in my head first so it doesn't come out wrong." Is that a weird thing? I do that sometimes.
You say a full statement in your head?
Sometimes if someone else is talking and I'm thinking about what my response will be, I've thought about it in my head before I say it. Clearly, when it comes to this podcast, I'm not pre-thinking anything I'm saying, but... because Carrie's response is, "Doesn't that seem like a waste of time?" And then he replies, "It only takes a second." Let him pre-think his thoughts.
Then he's like, "Do you mind if I just stay here tonight and just lie here with you?" Which, too intimate.
The reason he asked that is because he goes on to say, "I get so lonely in the city. Sometimes it's just nice to lie with someone."
And this is why those cuddle parties exist.
That is true. But Carrie is sort of doesn't know what to make of it, because in her voiceover, she goes, "It was hard to imagine that anyone so beautiful could ever be lonely." I mean, everyone gets lonely, Carrie.
Yeah, but you would think that a male supermodel would not feel so alienated.
Well, it's because he should be in Iowa being a cop.
Meanwhile, at the bodega, Miranda's buying cat food. And she runs into
Skipper. To which I'm like, I'm sorry, did he stalk her there? Isn't this very late at night?
Yeah, you can only run into someone at a bodega if they also live in your neighborhood.
And it is established that wherever they are, it's somewhere below 14th Street. Although, to be fair, this version of Miranda could live downtown. We don't know yet. They're still figuring things out with these characters.
So Skipper's like, "Why haven't you returned my calls?"
Exactly what you want, by the way, to be confronted after a long day of work at a bodega by a guy that you don't want to go on a date with.
And Miranda's like, "Don't you just want to go out with a girl your own age?"
And he says, "It's got nothing to do with age. I think you're luminous."
I think she's going to require some luminol is what I think. Wait, that's what it's called, right?
Yes, the stuff that you spray and you see if there's blood splatter that someone has tried to clean up after they bludgeoned you. Yes.
That's what's about to happen for Miranda.
The use of the word luminous, I think all women want is to see themselves the way a man does through his smudge glasses.
Well, I think luminous is a good compliment, but not from Skipper necessarily. No.
That's true. He's also there to buy Captain Crunch for his morning breakfast, which is another ick for me, personally.
Miranda falls for the luminous bit and is like, "Okay, fine, come home with me."
Ick, but also he's like, "Hold on, let me just get this cereal." And she's like, "I have cereal at my house."
So the next day, Carrie wakes up in bed with a bone. Stanford calls and is like, "Where's Derek?" And she hands him the phone.
Yes, to which Stanford's like, "How could you?" And she says, "We just talked." To which Stanford's like, "I knew he was gay." Like, Jesus, Stanford.
Babe, you should know if he's gay by now. Also, he's not gay. He wants to go to Iowa and have kids and be a cop.
Or maybe he's just so deeply in the closet. Maybe this is why he longs to be married and be a cop in Iowa. Again, we didn't have enough time with Derek.
We didn't.
So the wrap-up of the storyline with Barkley is that Samantha goes home with him and is almost pissed off that he's not filming her. She's like, okay, where's the camera? And then he's like, all right, the camera's there. He goes, but don't worry, I only do that with models.
Well, he's like, oh, did your friend Carrie tell you about the various felonies I have committed in this very bed? Like, if he got 4 years for each count,
he'd just be getting out of prison now. Well, the even more fucked up thing is, one, Samantha's like, I don't mind if you film me. And he's like, don't worry, I only film models. And she's like, no, 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 really, I'm cool with it. He's like, all right, I guess I'll make an exception. So insulting.
Yeah.
He's like, I only reserve this crime for people who are more beautiful than you and make a living off of it. But I guess in this case,
it's very dark. And the early episodes, you sort of get this sense that Samantha's self-esteem is actually quite low. Even if you go to the pilot, that shifts, of course.
Of course. It's something that is never remarked on in the entirety of the series that begins in the pilot is that Samantha wanted to fuck big first. And the love of her friend's life begins with the fact that her other friend attempted to fuck this guy.
And he turned her down. How awkward.
And then left her friend at the altar. Again, a more realistic explanation of why Samantha and Carrie aren't friends is like, I'm sorry, but I've been in love with Big this entire time.
Back at the coffee shop, Carrie is reflecting upon her night with the bone and the models and the modelizers. And she writes, I began to realize that being beautiful is like having a rent-controlled apartment overlooking the park. Completely unfair and usually bestowed upon those who deserve it the least.
Ouch, Carrie.
Yeah, beauty is random.
As we'll subsequently learn in future seasons, your apartment's rent-controlled. You're one of the lucky ones, Carrie.
Okay, but it's not overlooking the park.
Fair enough, fair enough.
Key distinction.
Something that is a complete outlier from this show is Big walks into the coffee shop, presumably having remembered where Carrie said that she lived and that there's a coffee shop underneath it where she sometimes works out of.
And he comes in and is like, you know, I've been doing a lot of thinking about your article about men who date models. And he basically says something to the effect of, beauty is great and all, but after a while, you just want to be with the one who makes you laugh.
And then he goes, okay, see you, and walks out of the cafe.
Carrie's like, I couldn't help but wonder, is he stalking me?
Why am I so attracted to him when he does? Yeah, I was gonna say, I think this is the most proactive Big is until he goes to find her in Paris. Right? Because Big is a classic avoidant attachment style, which is like when he can't have her, he's got to have her. But once he gets her, it's not really that interesting to him.
This is another episode ending like the pilot that does feel vaguely like a film noir.
And then the episode ends with a voiceover where Carrie says, I take that back. Beauty is fleeting, but a rent-controlled apartment overlooking the park is forever. Which I guess takes it to mean of like, ooh, this man has given me validation. Life is worth living again.
So we want to close out this episode with an exit survey. We've never done this on a Sex and the City episode before, although we did do it on And Just After That, or And Just Like That post show. But I think it will add something. So first question, who is the MVP of this episode?
God, it's really hard to say. You know what? Controversial opinion. I'm going to go with Derek the Bone.
Why?
He was just very earnest and sweet.
See, I'm going with Carrie. We're getting to know her character. We're getting to know her lifestyle. And I appreciate the whole 365 party girl thing that she has going on.
Absolutely.
Callous indifference to sex crimes is a little troubling, but I do like that this takes place in an edgy, dangerous world also.
I think I picked Derek because he is portrayed as an innocent who's maybe not going to be in New York for very long. He's not cruel and jaded like everyone else in this city. Next up we have, who are we voting off of the island of Manhattan? I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah, we got to go with Barkley for this one. We're not just voting him off the island of Manhattan. We're sending him to Rikers.
Oh, yeah. Straight to Rikers, sir.
Who is the best dressed?
I mean, Carrie,
indisputably. Fur coat is iconic. Best line of the episode.
Ooh.
I'm going with, I felt like I was wearing patchouli in a room full of Chanel.
It's pretty incredible. Yeah.
No shade to patchouli. I love patchouli personally.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on that one. That's my favorite line. Who are you? Which character do you identify with the most?
Miranda. I too have had awkward run-ins at a bodega. That felt very true to New York.
And I too, while living in New York and LA, have often wondered, do I need to be a frickin' supermodel to get a date in this city?
Frickin'? Who are you, Sarah Jessica Parker?
Frig.
What is your biggest trigger?
Barkley's sex crimes and terrible art? Like, here's the other thing. It's not a good art piece either.
I don't think it's that bad. Maybe it's not worthy of a gallery, but it is certainly worthy of a music video.
I'm having flashbacks to when we would do this on and just after that, because I'm realizing that often, and this is true for this, my biggest trigger and my hottest take are one and the same. My hottest take is that Barkley's art is not very good and it's illegal. If you're going to do something illegal, at least let it be good, possibly great. You're going to potentially go to jail for something.
See, my biggest trigger is the idea of Miranda force feeding Christy Turlington lard.
Oh, fair enough.
Lastly, hottest take. We know your hottest take. My hottest take is that modelizers deserve the death penalty.
Oh.
And it's not because they want to date beautiful women. It's because they want to date dumb people.
And also, while this is not explicitly said in Candace's article, the line between this modelizer behavior
and trafficking is very thin.
Yes, I was about to say, like, it's not explicitly said in Candace's article, but they do more in the article than the episode itself talk about how they really want to date very, very young girls, like still teenager girls. And the line between the modelizing behavior and trafficking, yes.
Yeah, she mentions 16-year-old models in the article.
Yes. So do I think some of these men that Candace interviewed were perhaps on Jeffrey Epstein's plane? Very possible.
Definitely possible. What are we rating this episode? How many Manolos?
I want to give it a high Manolo rating because I really loved this episode. I didn't remember how strong it was. But also, the sex crime of it all makes me want to knock off a few Manolos.
Yeah, it's tough. 7?
Yeah, I was going to say, I would give it a 9 on the excellent dialogue and setting up what we know the series to be. But the Barkley of it all, I think we got to knock off 2 Manolos. So yeah, 7.
The plot lines of Miranda and Samantha, like, aren't that major.
We didn't mention the fact that Charlotte is not in this episode except for the one apartment scene.
Yeah.
Which goes back to our rewatch theory that it's like they can only sustain 3 characters' plot lines. There are only a handful of episodes where all 4 characters get a storyline.
And this was not Char's time.
No, you just imagine that she was off screen just with a collection of Vogue and Harper's Bazaar just cutting out pictures of Christy Turlington.
It's Skipper that took Charlotte's screen time.
That's why he had to go.
And so do we, guys. Thank you for listening. As always, there are still tickets available for our London show.
Please come see us, guys.
And we will be back next week.
All right. See you then.
Bye.
Bye.
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.